Hello, everyone. Welcome to Locked On Suns, part of Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as always, I'm your host, Evan Sattery, joined by my co-host, Brendan Kleen. You can follow me on Twitter at eSattery, and you can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanKleen14. Also, make sure to follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page at Locked On PHX Suns to show us some more support. We're going to talk a little bit today. It's our usual Monday episode. We're going to be going our usual 3 days a week up until mini camp, training camp, media day, all that stuff in September. So still got another month or so to go on that. But today we're going to talk about not only the odds releasing in Las Vegas, and also Kevin Pelton talked about it on ESPN, but we're also going to talk about Devin Booker and how we expect him to play this season, because I for one, believe he's going to have a really monster season this year with all the extra spacing and talent around him. But we'll get to that in the later portion of the podcast. But let's start off, Brendan, with the Las Vegas odds and Kevin Pelton's ESPN odds you put out. I have the Las Vegas odds in front of me. I believe you probably have the Kevin Pelton ones in front of you. For the Westgate Las Vegas one, plus or minus 28.5. Do you think that's realistic for the Suns this year, even though they finished with 21-61 last season? They tanked really the last 30 or so games. Do you think that's around the money as far as over-under at 29?
Yeah, I mean, that's even more optimistic than Pelton's statistical projections, which are at 27.2. So, you know, I think obviously we've been talking about what our own expectations are for the team and trying to figure out, you know, adding Ariza, adding DeAndre Ayton, not really doing much to fix the point guard position, but still having the return of Brandon Knight to look forward to. So I think, you know, statistically and from a betting perspective, if you and I had been on the same page as far as like 30, maybe 35, if a lot breaks right from a health and player development standpoint, you know, I think for those, for the numbers and the betting odds to say that they're going to be just below that kind of makes sense to me, especially because, you know, from a statistical standpoint, a lot of it is based on real plus minus on ESPN, and they added a guy who is a little bit difficult to peg because rookies, you know, you're trying to project their college stats with DeAndre Ayton, and then Trevor Ariza is going to be a helpful player, but, you know, he's only really a role player, so even if he helps the team a lot, his impact probably won't be huge on the court, like adding points and, you know, counting stats all that much. So really it's just going to have to be that player development aspect of it, and that's kind of hard to really know for sure. So I think you and I are a little bit more optimistic that stuff can go well, but, you know, it's not surprising to see the numbers and the betting odds say otherwise.
Now, if you were in Vegas, I think we are both 21 years old, and thinking about it, I would take the over on that as far as the Bovada odds of plus 20.5. What would you do?
Ooh, I think I would probably have to stay away from it. Just, it's so close to where I already kind of feel like they're going to be, where I would just, it would be tough for me to pull the trigger. Like, I mean, like we were talking about before, when we were talking about, you know, there's people in the comment section on Brightside of the Sun and Twitter, just really, really optimistic about this team because they're, you know, fans who are excited about what the Suns have added. And we were talking like, if they get better, they can get a lot better and still be nowhere near the playoffs because they won so few games last year. So, I wouldn't really be surprised if they were to be a better team and some of those players do come along, but they still don't get a ton more wins. I mean, I don't know. You would take it?
Yeah, I think, honestly, if worst-case scenarios happen, we're, like, discounting injuries or anything happening here, but I feel like 30 wins is a realistic bottom number, and 35 is a high number. I feel like maybe 33, 32 wins is kind of, like, where I'm getting at as far as when we get to the prediction side of things in a couple months.
Yeah, I think the one thing that's a more persuasive argument, too, that I've been trying to think about and quantify in some way is just the fact that, you know, they didn't go about it as aggressively as they did, partially because there wasn't like an Eric Bledsoe or a Brandon Knight to worry about sitting in order to tank. But I think we both know, and we were talking about it in the moment, that last couple weeks of the season, if TJ Warren and Devin Booker don't sit, they win at least, you know, 2-3 more games, right?
Oh, for sure.
So if you think about, I mean, you can't pretend like we know how many games they would have won, but they were playing some bad teams in that stretch, and you know, there were some winnable games, especially if you have somebody as good as Devin Booker, and you're playing against at that point the, you know, teams doing the same thing, a bunch of other teams that are tanking and not putting their best guys out there, and playoff teams that are resting players. So they definitely could have won more. So if you think about them as not quite as bad as 21 wins, I think getting all the way to that 29 to get that over is a little bit more possible. It's just, it's tough for me to really trust it until I see it, I guess. Maybe if you ask me after preseason or after training camp, I might feel a little bit better. But yeah, I mean, Devin Booker played 54 games. So that is a little bit persuasive to me. That's the one thing I've seen out there where I'm like...
Yeah, I really feel like, honestly, it makes a lot of sense for me to go with the over there, but also to tone it back a little bit there as far as the odds go. I feel like it makes a lot of sense for people to tone it back just a little bit as far as the odds go with the Suns making the playoffs, because when you see what the Bovada odds also have for the Western Conference, you're talking about 44 wins as the barometer for them to make the playoffs. And I think we're both in agreement there that the Suns aren't even close to getting there.
No, I don't think, I think, you know, whether they go above or below their couple projection systems that have come out, that's one argument. The playoffs are a complete other argument. I mean, yeah, the Kevin Pelton projections, which are ESPN Insider, but I'm sure people have seen most of it make the rounds at this point. The Lakers aren't even in the playoffs, according to, you know, the numbers as they currently stand. I think everyone kind of thinks they'll improve at some point during the season, make a trade or, you know, add some buyout guys. That tends to happen for LeBron James teams, but that's pretty crazy. I mean, there's just so much talent in the West where, you know, you look at a team you might even really like. I think the Thunder got even better than they were last year, and they were a team that was hanging out at the 3 seed for most of the year, and then, you know, the other teams around them just get so much better, and now they're, you know, they're sitting at 6th in these ESPN projections. So yeah, the West, we've talked about that a ton, but it's just, you know, it's going to be a while before these teams that are constant mainstays at the top of the conference go away and allow, you know, teams like the Suns, the Lakers, the Mavericks, younger teams to really make a push. So, I think the playoffs, people really, I would be surprised even if the team was expecting that. But I think they can get a lot better, and they probably can exceed these expectations that have been put out there. It's just, you know, the playoffs are a complete other conversation in my mind.
Now, when we had Mo Dakhil on Wednesday, he was kind of on the pessimistic side of the Suns, and that's understandable from an outsider's perspective. But do you agree with him? Because it's an interesting topic that I haven't really thought of yet, because I haven't expected it to happen. But if the Suns stumble out of the gate and they're one of the worst teams in the, not only the Western Conference, but the NBA through the first 2 or 3 months of the season, do you expect them to, like, quote-unquote tank again? Or how do you think that's going to go? Because I really hope that we're not talking about RJ Barrett and Zion Williamson in this time around April, but what's your thoughts on just the route they could go if things aren't going smoothly over the first few months of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I think thinking about that, you kind of have to look at the rest of the conference just to try to get an idea of what could go wrong. We don't know the schedule yet. That's going to play a big role as well. But I think luckily for them, their actual division isn't going to be terrible. I mean, the Northwest Division, I think, has... they all could make the playoffs in that division, but the Suns are going to play all these teams 4 times that aren't, you know, incredible. So the Kings probably are going to be worse than the Suns. The Clippers, you know, they're going to maybe hang around the playoff picture, but they're not, you know, a top-notch team. The Lakers obviously are going to be a tough one, and then obviously the Warriors as well. But I think the Suns are lucky in that the division's not going to be too terrible for them. But, you know, if they really just struggle, if DeAndre Ayton doesn't put it together as quickly as you'd hope, or somebody gets injured, the point guard position is a concern like we think it might be, then, you know, I don't think that, I kind of what I was hinting at with what happened last year is, like, the only choice they had was to allow injured players to just get more rest than they really needed and not push, you know, Devin Booker's wrist problem late in the year, things like that. That was their only chance to lose games that they had a chance at winning. Whereas 2 seasons ago is like they had Eric Bledsoe that they could sit. Like, I don't know really if there's a path for this team to just get worse instantaneously to really tank like a lot of other teams are going to do by, you know, sitting their vets or trying wacky lineups, benching good players in the fourth quarter. The Suns don't really have stuff like that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think unless they buy out Trevor Ariza or trade him at the deadline or sell off Troy Daniels and Brandon Knight, which I don't expect to happen, I think they're just going to organically see the results of being a competitive team for an 82-game stretch. And it's been a while since they've said that in Phoenix. But one really quick point I wanted to ask you before we go into Devin Booker and our expectations for him is the overall thoughts on how important the point guard position is for the Suns this year. Because, all right, Brennan, is it fair to say that with all the stock they're putting into Brandon Knight being the starting point guard next year, do you feel like it's fair to say that if we see the old Brandon Knight as far as a year or two ago where he just wasn't good at all, they're really kind of betting on the Milwaukee Brandon Knight to show back up? Because if we do see the old Brandon Knight, I feel like that's going to be a bad thing to happen because all of a sudden they're not putting their depth behind him at Eli Okobo, who has had no NBA experience, Shaq Harrison, who doesn't really have much primary initiator experience. Just how much stock do you think they're putting into Brandon Knight being that quality point guard this year? Because that's really a kind of a lot for me to look at that.
Yeah, it's huge, and I think, I don't know if, I mean, I definitely don't think that they did enough to feel comfortable, and I'm still sort of waiting for something else to happen there. You know, they did sign Isaiah Cannon, which we didn't talk about yet, which is not really that humongous of a move. It's on a non-guaranteed, basically just a, you know, really just a training camp deal, even though it's not officially that. He'll, I guess, push, probably really it's just going to be a matter of pushing Shaq Harrison for that guard depth, but I don't think either one of those guys, if you're counting on either one of those players to really be a part of your team, a core part of winning, that's just going to be a problem. That goes back to something happened to Brandon Knight if you're at that point in your season counting on one of those guys. So it really is going to come down tonight, and I want to trust that they've seen from a health standpoint, from, you know, development, continuing to get better with all the time he had in the offseason and recovering from injury to put work into his game as well. I hope that he's back to the player that we saw that the Suns wanted when they traded for him all those years ago. Because, I mean, we've talked about before plenty of times, like the version of Brandon Knight that was effective those couple of seasons in Milwaukee, that's a really solid fit, I think, next to Devin Booker. I wrote about it a couple weeks ago for Brightside. Like, he was part of a top five defense in Milwaukee, despite being, he doesn't have long arms. He doesn't, you know, have the most elite athleticism. He doesn't look like the type of guy who's going to be an elite point guard defender, but he's been effective when he's had the chance. He's been on, you know, those Milwaukee teams were pretty aggressive on defense and he fit in there. So I think if he can get back to similar level, then he can be a help for the team. It's not so much that I don't think from a stylistic or just, you know, efficiency standpoint that he can return to that kind of player. He's done it before. Really, I just think it's hard for me to bet on somebody who was missed an entire season from a pretty serious injury. That's the problem that I have with it.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Just you're betting a lot of stock into a really almost an unknown guy at this point. I understand Ryan Madonna's point of view because he did trade that first overall pick. They turned a number 10 overall pick that went to LA through Philadelphia, and it's kind of ironic that they got it back with the Mikal Bridges trade, but they are putting a lot of extra stock into the Brandon Knight table, and I think it's a really interesting thing to follow over the next couple of weeks. But let's transition over to Devin Booker really quick and look at how we expect him to do this season. And I'll start myself here. I feel like, is it fair to say that I feel like Devin Booker might be one of the best shooting guards in the NBA next year? Because if you look at just the spacing and the talent they provided around him, he still put 25-5-5 with double teams and triple teams. Really just tight pressure on the entire season when he played. Now you have DeAndre in around him, Mikal Bridges, Trevor Ariza. You can throw in Eli Okobo too for spacing, a 100% healthy Davon Reed. I feel like he's going to be a guy averages close to 27 points per game next year. Am I wrong?
I think he's going to have to. I mean, I think it's just, you look around the team, especially I imagine that they're going to be a more efficient offensive team. I think that, you know, it remains to be seen how well some of the parts of this offense can fit into what Igor Kokoschkov wants to do. Josh Jackson, DeAndre Ayton, we're not positive how those guys will look. But I think you're going to see a lot of possessions that finish with some sort of shot for Devin Booker. Even if he's not handling the ball, I think he'll probably compare it. You go December-January stretch around the time of when he missed 9 games with injury. He had that 30-10 game in Houston. He was was really, really like a de facto point guard. That's the most we've ever seen that happen. I don't imagine he'll get to that point, even if they do let him take the reins every so often. So it's going to be a different look for him. But I think they're, you know, if their offense is going to succeed, if they're really going to just be a competitive team in general, he's going to need to do that. And I think we've seen him make massive strides every year, and I don't see why he wouldn't continue to do that. I think really, though, aside from productivity from a point standpoint, I really want him to get even more efficient, and he can just organically move up his offensive, you know, his points per game just by being more efficient. He doesn't even need to take more shots necessarily. If he can get to the line more, can finish around the rim better and take and make more threes, that's going to be pretty easy for him to slide up and do that. I just, you know, that level of efficiency is really like the elite guys in the whole league.
Now, I've touched on it a little bit before on the pod in the past few weeks, past few months, and thinking about it more with how the Suns attack their offseason, it obviously could be changed in next summer when they have point guards like Ricky Rubio, Kemba Walker, Kyrie Irving, Terry Rozier, all these guys available for them in free agency or via trade if they want to. But what's really interesting for me is how they got all these wings around him now with Ariza and Bridges and like 100% healthy Davon Reed, like I mentioned. Do you see down the line, or do you think that in the Suns front office they envision a scenario, not right now, but 2 to 3 years down the line, where Devin Booker does take on that primary initiator role? It's at least, it looks like on the surface what they're creating is a team that could easily be like a James Harden type of thing, where he could be on the worst guy, the worst scorer on the opposing team, and kind of camp out there and save his energy for the offensive side.
Yeah, I do think so. And I think one thing that we can't forget with the point guard discussion is, you know, we're talking about this team's further away than you would, maybe Suns fans would hope, or you would expect at this point in a rebuild. I don't even know if that's fair to say, but they're definitely young and inexperienced, just like they have been. They're not going to make the playoffs most likely. So the problem with the point guard position, I think, to me, is that you worry about how it affects the development and progress from the rest of the roster. I'm not really so worried about the point guard position being so bad that they lose games, because, you know, I want to see the team win more, just because I think that's important for development as well. But I don't really care if having a bad point guard depth makes them like a 27 win team when really they could have been a 31 win team. That's not so important to me. It's mostly just what happens to the rest of the roster. So if you think about it that way, Brandon Knight's kind of inconsequential, and you really hope, because of how well Elie Okobo fits with what you're talking about, he's sort of a combo guard in his own right. He needs to get better as a passer and defensive player, but if he can, he's a pretty solid fit, you know, as far as just like an archetype next to Devin Booker as well. So I think that's something to watch too, where, you know, through the course of the season, if Okobo can start to look like that guy, you feel pretty good about moving forward with those two players and having complementary pieces, where if Devin Booker has the ball in his hands a little bit more, Okobo is going to be somebody who the defense still has to respect. The problem last year, and even that will be happening early in the season this year, is you put the ball in his hands and you create a hole at shooting guard, because they just don't have enough guard depth to make up for it. So it's almost in some ways like him at the two makes things fit a little bit easier. Whereas, you know, last year, sometimes the best option was for him to play point guard because there was no point guard. I think that's really the big problem. If Okobo and, you know, Knight, we'll see. But if Okobo can play, then that just helps the depth so much and allows you to be more flexible there.
What's your thoughts on this lineup real quickly, as far as Booker and like a pinch being the primary initiator at point guard, so to say? I feel like this lineup makes a lot of sense. They want to roll it out, and it's Booker at point, Davon Reed at shooting guard, Mikal Bridges at small forward, and Trevor Rees at the four, then Ayton at the five. I feel like if you have those three just switching like crazy, I feel like that can make up for it a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the best way. I was just talking about, you know, what makes the most sense. One way that, like you're saying, one way that putting Book at point guard does make more sense is on defense, allowing them to get all of those switchy, versatile forwards and wings onto the court at once. So, you know, they have protected themselves from the lack of guard depth with overstocking the wing and forward rotation. So I think that they could get creative. Some of those lineups, though, worry me from an offensive standpoint. I mean, even we're expecting Bridges to be really solid, and he's really the only shooter outside of Ariza in that group, even though there are so many of those guys. Like, I don't really trust Davon Reed as a shooter. TJ Warren, obviously not. Josh Jackson, obviously not. even, you know, Chris and Bender, you can't necessarily feel great about those guys spacing the floor. So that's what will make it tough, but I'm excited to see those types of lineups too.
We haven't talked about him on the podcast because I feel like he hasn't been a guy we thought would be on the roster. He still might not be when training camp rolls around. But with the lack of shooting that you mentioned there, do you think we see some Troy Dano still in the lineup next year?
I don't think it's worth it. Like, I do, you know, I wrote that spacing rating piece last year, and it actually came back up in my mind when they re-signed Isaiah Cannon, because he was quietly one of the – just his willingness to take threes, he was not even efficient doing it, but he just took so many that it helped their offense. And obviously Daniels was really the only other guy that consistently did that outside of Devin Booker. So, there's an argument to be made that it helps. I just think, how long can you keep playing guys like that when you have so many young players that they just need to play? It doesn't even really matter at a certain point who's making shots. Like, really, what kind of value is Troy Daniels giving to your offense, even knowing what a great scorer he is? Like, he gives up almost as much as he brings on defense, and he's not a playmaker. He's not clearly not like a rebounder, and he doesn't really provide much value outside of shooting. I just think they're not going to be as desperate for minutes this year. And if they're playing Daniels just for the sake of that minor floor spacing bump that he gives you, it's going to be frustrating, because I just think there's guys who deserve the chance way more than he has.
Oh, I totally agree with you there. I feel like the healthiness of Reed, the additions of even George King and also Mikal Bridges kind of make him expendable to that point. I'd honestly be surprised if Daniels is still on the roster within the next 6 weeks, but we'll have to see on that. But we'll dive back over to Booker again real quickly. I want to touch on his defense for a second, because, again, with the Mo podcast on Wednesday, we touched on it just a little bit. If Booker can be just a little bit more into it as far as tapping into his motor defensively, I feel like that takes the defense up just a little bit to an extra level that what hasn't been in the past. So do you expect a more aggressive Booker on that end?
I hope so. I mean, you know, people point to that quote he had where, you know, this is the last year I'm not going to make the playoffs. I'm putting that pressure on myself. And, you know, I don't really know if that's going to happen. Like we've just been talking about, it doesn't really matter for this point, which is just, it's not really like, you know, he does need to get better on offense. Like I just said, he needs to get more efficient. He needs to finish around the rim a lot better, but a lot of that's going to come on defense. That's what Mo was talking about. He was completely out on Booker as a defender, which I don't really know. Like, I think right now that's fair, but he's also a young player. Like he should get better. I think he has to get a lot better for them to really reach their peak as a team. And I know what we were talking about with Mo too is like Harden, when they started switching, Harden became slightly more effective just by virtue of their system, because he's big enough and strong enough to defend bigger players. I wonder, you know, they really never switched Booker onto bigger players last year. They really just didn't switch much at all last year with Triano. If they do that more this year with the personnel better suited to do it, and Booker's up to that challenge of, you know, battling threes and fours, I think that could be an interesting way to use him. Just see if, you know, he's an oversized two. He's, you know, 6'6", 6'7". He has the size to fight with those guys. That just takes, you know, a different kind of energy and sometimes even more energy. And, you know, who knows if he's up to that, because he hasn't been up to defending those smaller guys with how much responsibility he has on offense. It's just going to be finding that balance for him. But I think that could help.
Yeah, when I spoke with assistant GM Pat Conley once before a game last season, he told me the thing that stood out with Booker as far as physically goes is just he's deceptively strong. Like, he doesn't look muscular, at least last year. I mean, he's been working out a lot this summer. He might be even more so. But he can guard those guys. Like he can bully guys through. He gets to the free throw line a little bit more than we expect as a 6'6" shooting guard. He got 6 free throws per game last year. So I feel like he could be up to that switching challenge if he wanted to be. That's just a big question. I feel like if Booker wants to tap into that and buy into Kokoschkov's scheme. Getting into Igor for a second here, because it's really interesting to me now. How do you think that Igor is going to run his defensive schemes? Because it seems like we are sort of going in that Houston Golden State sort of mold as far as what he wants to do defensively.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know if it's possible to know what he wants to do on defense, because he's never really, you know, he's been much more of an offensive system guy as an assistant. And, you know, he worked with guards and stuff as a player development coach. A lot of guys in Utah, Howell Neto, Ricky Rubio, et cetera, that point to him as a, you know, a big source of their improvement. I don't really know if you can know what he wants to do on defense. The only reason that I feel like they're going to switch more is just, you know, looking at the personnel, that really seems like the best way to form an effective defense. Now, you know, DeAndre Ayton getting better at protecting the rim and devoting attention and work to that could change things. So, you know, we're a long way from the season starting. There's a long way to go for him to make improvements there, working with actual NBA coaches that are asking him to do that consistently. I think that'll make a big change for him. But same, I mean, it's not even just him though. Like Rashawn Holmes, probably better as a, you know, a little bit more switchy player rather than just dropping on the pick and roll and hovering around the rim. That's, you know, not really an effective way for him to play with his athleticism and quickness. All those wings we talk about, Booker, to me, it looks like they should be switching. But they're also a really young team, and that stuff's really tough, as Mo was talking with us about on Wednesday. That's tough to just drill into guys in their first, second, third season in the league when they can't even consistently nail down the basic defensive principles that you have to have, guarding the pick and roll and, you know, staying with your man in certain situations and stuff like that. If you can't do that, it's going to be tough to assume that they can switch. I just think that's probably ultimately, maybe it's not this year, but eventually going to be their best way to be an efficient defense.
Yeah, I feel like with all the length and then the versatility they've added this summer, especially with guys like Ariza, Bridges, for example, like I mentioned, I feel like that's just the perfect way to go about it. We've been talking about it. I feel like that's how the modern defense is going to be played nowadays, is switch everything, see how it goes, because I feel like they have all the makings of it. Because even Dragan Bender, Marquise Chriss, those are guys who could switch eventually if they
And they did that last year. Like, those were some of the only guys that they would actually let switch pick and rolls were those two.
Yeah, and I think Josh Jackson saw a little bit too last year. I think we should expect more of that as well. But
Here's the thing, too, though, to just kind of play devil's advocate. Like, they didn't have anybody as good as Trevor Ariza from a one-on-one perspective. Like, I think that there is some potential where if they're playing a team, the Warriors obviously come to mind, but any team that has a really, you know, the Celtics dominant wing scorer at the, you know, 3-4, I think that, you know, you could see Ariza just lock in on that guy, and that could help their defense too. Like, they didn't have anybody to stop those types of players last year, so maybe, especially early in the season, they won't switch in those situations because they can't trust anyone outside of maybe Jackson and Ariza to even have a chance against those guys.
Is it fair to say that Ariza is their best on-ball defender in a good 3 to 4 years?
What, Ariza?
Yeah.
Oh, like the best one they've had in 3 or 4 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't even know. I guess PJ Tucker probably comes to mind for me, but he's a different kind of guy. He's not going to guard quicker like Jason Tatum. He's not going to be able to stay with those younger wings. He's not as long as Ariza. He's better against like fours and fives, but he was really good. I remember games the end of the year that, or I guess, you know, the right before he got traded 2 seasons ago, he was locking down Melo, Anthony Davis. The Suns were winning games they really had no business winning just because he was such a good isolation defender. But I think Ariza is probably better, especially because you do have that switching potential too.
For sure. I feel like, honestly, they have the makings. They're cooking up the ingredients, so to say, as far as having a more modern defensive scheme. And that's exciting to think about when you're surrounding Booker and especially DeAndre in his first couple of years. But to wrap up today's pod, Brennan, I want to get your thoughts overall, just your expectations for Devin Booker, just your predictions. If you had to predict the stat line for Devin Booker next season, what would it be?
Yeah, I think somewhere around 27 points, probably, you know. I don't know if I'd go quite that high, so maybe I'll say 26 just to have a little bit different than you. I'm not sold that he can adjust that quickly to what, you know, what he's going to have to do in the new system. I hope that his assists can go up. I honestly hope that his rebounds can, I guess, 4.5. I don't know how much higher they'll go on a per-game basis, but I just think, especially if they're going to be switching and he does, you know, get in the mix with the interior defense a little bit more, maybe he can rebound better. But that's kind of asking a lot, I think. Really, it's the points and the efficiency for me. I mean, he only shot 43% last year. It has to get better. You know, taking even more. He took 7.1 threes. If he can go up to, you know, 8 or 9 a game, make that a really big part of his offensive diet, I think that could really help him. And finishing around the rim, I keep hammering it home. But I think those numbers are the ones I'm looking at more than his counting stats, because he was really impressive. 25-5-5. I mean, everybody has seen all the comparisons historically at this point, but that put him in rarefied air for as young as he was to do that last year. So I don't know if he can get much better from a counting stats perspective, but he needs to get more efficient for them to really improve.
Yeah, I think efficiency is the big point as far as getting all this talent around him. I think that's going to be the easy jump for him. And I think it has to be the easiest jump for him to really become that next. We expect that lead to be taken again this year from Booker to be like a certified star player, and the efficiency obviously has to go up a little bit more. But I want to know if mine's a little bit too ambitious, because I think it's going to be 27 points, 5 rebounds. I'm going to leave decimals out of it here. I'm just going to round up. 27 points, 5 rebounds, 7 assists on 40% from 3. Is that too ambitious for you?
No, I think 40% from 3 is that kind of that doesn't have to happen, but I think it easily could happen, and that's an easy way for him to get up to that higher threshold in points. The problem, I just have to see what they're going to do on offense to know that he's going to be able to get all the way up there for assists. That's the only bone I would pick with your guess, just because, you know, if he really truly isn't handling the ball a super amount early in games, it's going to be tough for him to rack up the assists the way he did last year.
Yeah, I really feel like maybe 5 to 6 is more realistic, because it seems like that probably is going to be the case with Brandon Knight getting more ball handling duties, also Josh Jackson. I think Dragan Bender is still getting some more ball handling opportunities. There's more of like a fulcrum on the inside of the wing there. So I think it's going to be some exciting developments there. But anything else you want to hit on as far as Book goes?
No, I mean, he's enjoying a vacation in Greece. He's a, you know, newly rich man, and he's hanging out with Brandon Ingram and D'Angelo Russell. So I'm excited to see when he comes back and we get into training camp and whatnot, see what he does, what he looks like, and how the rest of the team kind of fits around him. But I really just want training camp to start. I'm bored of, you know, trying to guess and wonder about this, because there's so much change going on. I'm really interested to see how it all coalesces.